accession number 27068, Mr. George Wolfe, Real 2. We were talking about when you did your parents, or your mother rather, really, your father was by this time ill with the injury, established a guest house in West Hampstead in London. But what one I wondered whether anything you'd been able to do for your grandparents before the war started. In other words, you know, were they able to do anything to get them out?
Yes, indeed. My father made quite sure that my mother's parents, in other words, my grandparents, were allowed to come to this country, and also my mother's sister. The only people that were left behind were my mother's brother and his wife, but he was not immediately threatened because his wife was a German, non-Jewish German person, so they managed to more or less hide during the war. But they had a son who also we brought over before war started, my first cousin. So there's all the family, I mean, on my side, luckily enough, we didn't lose anybody because of my father being a native of this country, sort of thing, which was very fortunate.
Now, what about the bombing? Which comes first, really, your ARP running or the bombing? I don't know. Well, had the bombing started?
No. I started applying as a sort of ARP runner. All the organization was set up, and in fact we were sort of all wondering when something was going to happen. And of course then in 1940, early 1940, when the Blitz actually started, summer 1940, we then obviously went operational. But by that time I was also working full time. I was manager of a photographic studio in Hammersmith at the time for the big firm. We had branches all over London and, as I said, the southeast. And one day, actually during the Blitz, I swapped places with somebody next door. We were taking fire. We were fire watching on the roof during the Blitz. And we took turns, all the local shops and managers took their turn. And one night, I'd actually previously on that day met a young girl, as young lads would do, and she felt she'd like to be taken to the pictures, which I did, although it was my turn to do fire watching. And I swapped with the manager of the next door shoe shop. He agreed to do my turn if I did his next door. But unfortunately, when I came to work the next morning, one of these very, very large parachute bombs had dropped right on that shopping area. There was very little left, and certainly all the people that were on the roof that night had perished. And I've always felt that should have been me up there and nobody else. But I also felt that from that day forward, I never had any fear of anything happening to me during the war. I never got worried because I knew, or I felt, that if it had been my turn, I would have died that night and not later on during the war. So I was never really afraid after that, with all the actions that followed later on.
Now, what were your duties as a fire watcher? What?
Well, the thing was there were a lot of incendiary bombs being dropped, and we had from the roofs in the area, we had a great sort of area where we could see and follow the attacks, the aerial attacks coming in, and then the fire bombs. We also then went and had stirrup pumps with buckets of water, which we occasionally had to put out a few incendiaries that dropped fairly near on the roofs, in fact, sometimes, and also obviously helped the fire services and the ARP services to generally clear the area and generally help where we could. Apart from those couple of nights, we never had really an awful lot to do. It was mostly quite a social thing. There was usually four or five of us. We made ourselves a little cabin on the roof where we had a little bit of bedding and some camp mats.
And this is in Hammersmith?
That was in Hammersmith, King Street, Hammersmith. And played cards and talked, and generally it was quite a social thing until the bombs started falling. And luckily enough, as I said, apart from this one really nasty thing there, we never had very much action in that particular area, although we saw bombs exploding all over London practically, and the East End being on fire, etc. You could see from there, you know, from the rooftops quite well. The whole sky was lit up, and you know, we always felt, well, here for the grace of God for us.
And was there much bombing in West Hampstead?
Not a lot. There were several houses knocked down, one opposite ours actually, and we had some slight bomb damage, some windows blown out and a few cracks in the walls, which after the war we got compensation for, and for the repairs that had to be done in those days. I think, if I remember correctly, it was about £300 that we got for damage repair, which in those days was quite a goodly sum of money.
Now, anything else you remember about the Blitz years, or the Blitz year?
Not really, except when I then part of the time I worked in the Oxford Street studio as well, in the West End, and there, of course, there was a lot more bomb damage, and very often coming to work in the morning, you never knew what to find. I mean, several times I had to walk to work over broken glass and shop windows blown out, and rubble in the street. And I remember our own studio, which had a shop front, the window was blown out, and usually during a raid, during the day, there was a bank opposite where they allowed us in to take shelter in their vaults, which usually kept us fairly safe. But you never knew what to expect. Sometimes the transport was so bad to walk most of the way, and we just managed to get to work somehow, and there was always a sign in the window saying open as usual, whatever happened. And we did the same, but as I said, we only had a limited amount of photographic materials available. Very often we had about 2 hours in the morning where we served people who wanted to have their photographs taken, passport photographs and other photographs. And the rest of the day, we just had to close down because our quota of material had run out.
So, did that reduce your income accordingly?
No. No, the firm paid us our full salary, which I must admit wasn't a great deal in those days. Even I remember as a manager of the studio and the shop, the sales staff, I made, I think it was £12.50 a week plus commission or something like that. It wasn't very much. But in those days, apparently it was a living wage, so to speak.
Did you think of joining the Home Guard ever, or was the ARP enough for you? Well, fire watching?
That was enough, because I knew that I would be called up into the services sooner or later. I was a fit young man. And I wanted to go anyway. I wanted to go into the services once I got called up.
Anything else that you remember before you get called up? You get called up in 42, April.
Yes, April 42.
Anything else that happened before then?
Nothing radical I can remember. I lived a fairly normal life, went to work, got home. Sometimes I managed to go to cinema with friends. My parents hardly ever went out in those days. They were quite happy looking after their clients, and also we very often, even at home, there was several, three or four of us who used to sometimes play cards and also religiously listen to the 9 o'clock news on the radio in the evening to make quite sure we were up to date with anything that was going on. And of course, the most terrible thing was, of course, 1940 when Dunkirk came about. I mean, that was a very exciting time and a very anxious time for most people, because we then thought that most likely we'd be invaded and swamped and possibly would share the fate of millions of other, particularly Jewish people on the continent, that lost their lives, you know. So it wasn't a very happy time, because everything seemed to be going wrong at the time.
What about rationing? Did that affect you much?
Yes, obviously rationing did. But having by that time a fairly big household with a large number of people, it made it easier to make rations go around, because obviously some people wouldn't take sugar, and that was left to other people, and generally it made a lot easier to, what shall we say, exist on the rations.
What about clothes? Was that a nuisance or?
No, we mostly were pretty well provided with clothes, which we wore clothes, which we bought pre-war, most of it. Some of the articles we needed, like underwear, socks, that's, we could manage to get on coupons and one thing and another. No, I don't think I can recall any particular hardship as far as the rationing was concerned, I must admit.
Now tell me how you were called up. What exactly was the procedure?
Well, the procedure was that when I received my call-up papers, I was called to an RAF assessment board at West Drayton in Middlesex. I think West Drayton is still Middlesex. And they put me through a little examination. I remember the one thing, they wanted a spelling test. I had to spell the word Mediterranean. And being sort of fairly well equipped linguistically, I sort of said Mediterranean, and I got that off quite pat, to the amazement of most of the people there. And one or two other things, and then what branch would you like? So I said, well, I'm a professional photographer, I'd like to go into photography. So I was, a few weeks later, not very long after that, I was called up, and the procedure there was, we first went to, I got a rail ticket to Penarth, which is near Cardiff in Wales, for kitting out. So we were there for 3 days, got our uniform, and we're quite treated more or less as civilians, which most of us still were, really.
Do you remember what they kitted you out with?
Yes, uniform, boots, all the everything, shirts, vests, anything you wore. And so then 3 days later we were marched to the station and took a train to Weston-super-Mare, where I never ever forget coming off the train at Weston-super-Mare. There was a flight sergeant standing at the end of the platform. He was an ex-guardsman transferred to the RAF as a disciplinarian. And he stood at the end of the platform and bellowed at us poor civilians and absolutely frightened the life out of us. And I must admit, you know, I thought, well, if this is serious, what am I facing here? Anyway, they then marched us to various billets, actually. We were billeted in civilian houses.
In West Drayton?
No. Oh, I'm at Western Supermare now. Western Supermare. And where we did our so-called square bashing, in other words, the initial training for 4 weeks. Four weeks or six weeks.
That would be April to May, would it?
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Take me through the sort of training they put you through.
Well, we used to have to be on parade about 6:30, I think it was, in the morning, on the promenade at Western Supermare. Then we used to go for short runs, jogs. We were trained in marching and general service things like lining up and dress, right dress, left dress, and the usual.
How did you take to drill? Some people like it.
I liked it. I must admit, I found not difficult, but unfortunately, and I was taught this afterwards by the very flight sergeant I mentioned before, that each time they had a new intake, they picked on one poor soul who they made look a right idiot, and unfortunately he took all the brunt of the what shall we say, the jokes and the he was the awkward squad, and luckily enough I wasn't it, so therefore on the whole I enjoyed it. I really did, except possibly for getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning or something, which was never my strong point.
So there was drill. What other training did you do then?
Unarmed combat.
Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, in those days, you were trained to sort of vary all the holds and how to trip up people and how to put them down and how to possibly kill them, throttle them or knife them or whatever. Which of course for us was of little consequence because we were hardly ever likely to be in close combat with people. On the other hand, I was once or twice, but that was not expected. Anyway, you know, it was a sort of jiu-jitsu type of holds and that sort of thing. And then we had a passing out parade.
That's unarmed combat. You weren't taught how to shoot the rifle or anything?
Yes, we also were told how to handle a Lee Enfield 303 rifle. I think, if I remember correctly, we went on to a range and did some shooting practice on the range. Yes.
Were you a good shot?
Yeah, I always have been a fairly good shot. I must admit, even when I tried it out on the fun fair, I always used to come away with a teddy bear or something like that. And yes, as I said, the whole service environment appealed to me.
Was it just the rifle, or did you do bayonet training, hand grenades, Lewis gun, that sort of thing as well?
No, it was just the rifle. I can't even recall having fixed bayonets fixed, but it may have been. I'd be alive.
What about PT, physical training?
Yes, we did a lot of PT. As I said, first thing in the morning we did jogging and then exercises, PT, in PT vest and shorts and that. We did that every morning.
Any running or...?
Yeah, jogging along the promenade, running along the promenade. That was part and parcel of the early morning wake-up calls.
Was there an assault course they put you through?
No.
Or? Any other training you got at Western Supermare?
Yeah, well, just that general sort of one or two lectures about service life, the King's, as it was then, King's regulations, what to expect, what to avoid, and generally how to make a good conscript. And I must admit that I admired, even then, the way they managed to turn absolute pure civilians into good servicemen, I should say, within a space of about 4 to 6 weeks, and I have never felt as fit before or after.
Now, how did you get on with the other recruits? I mean, you were well educated, Jewish, not by, you know, by background, and a conscript with a lot of other conscripts, and it can be a hard environment. How did you get on with them?
No, I must admit, I've never had any, even to this day, I have no trouble in meeting people, being with people, socializing. I'm a fairly gregarious sort of person, and I love being with people, talking to people.
So there was no bullying?
No friction, no bullying, no, except for the NCOs, whose job it was. But once you realised and you could fit in and you were left alone, you weren't the one man that was normally set on.
Were the instructors, other than the picking on one, were they fair? Did they know the stuff? What did
they
you
were
think?
Extremely fair, and this is what we felt, and that's why everybody more or less tried their best, because we felt even when you got shouted at or you felt things, you know, you were practically exhausted and they wanted to do another route march or something, but you felt they were fair. Even this flight sergeant, who I felt in the beginning I'd absolutely loathed, but no, I admired him in the end. He did a great job. And when we left there, we all had a few drinks and thanked the man for really turning us into servicemen.
Was there a passing out parade? I think you mentioned.
Yes, there was a passing out parade.
What was that like? Anything special? Or?
No, it was a largish parade, about 300 people, I think. And it was taken by, I think it was a wing commander, but I'm not quite sure. I couldn't tell definitely. I don't think it was a higher rank than that. And he was in charge of the whole training unit, and the headquarters was at one of the top hotels in Weston-super-Mare. I think it was the top hotel, which was taken over as headquarters at the time. Now
where were you to go then? You'd passed out, that's 6 weeks, that's from April to May-ish, perhaps June. May.
No, it wasn't June, because I was, by then time, I was halfway through my course at number one school of photography in Farnborough.
That's where you went?
That's where I went. I was posted to Farnborough, number one school of photography at the RAF establishment.
Now, what was the setup of the number one school of photography? Because it's quite a famous establishment.
Well, it is a very big establishment, and the school is only one part of it. I mean, it's a vast thing. They do research on aircraft. They've got wind tunnels there. We had captured Messerschmitt on show, but we had nothing to do with any of the other sections. It was a case of we went through a 16-week photographic course, which was very, very exacting.
Now, what was the setup of that course? I mean, how big was the School of Photography? How was it organised?
Well, it was organised in various sections. That one group, let's say, went on aerial cameras, one for specified time. Another group went into interpretation, photographic interpretation. Another group went into processing. Other group went into still cameras, photographing, picked 10x8 photographs. And so that they must have had, on my course were about 30 people, but on the other end there was probably four different sections going at the same time, so probably about 100, 120 people, but I am guessing here, I couldn't say for certain.
Now, if we look at the course, should we start with the cameras? You all did all elements of the course, did you?
Yes.
So you did all four elements.
All the elements.
Which cameras would come first? The still ones, I suppose, really?
Yes, I'm not quite sure which sequence we were working in there. Probably the still cameras, which were Kodak sort of 10x8 cameras on tripods, which you used for photographing aircraft and that sort of thing, and parades.
Not for photographs from aircraft?
Not from photographs. For photographs from aircraft, it was the F-24 aerial camera, where you had to be able to absolutely describe every movement, every screw on that camera by the time you... And the main thing was it had an automatic mechanism. What's it called? Something. It was a timer with it where you could... it has a name. I really forgot at the moment.
It's all right, don't worry.
It's...
Was this F-24 a still camera from the aircraft?
From the aircraft, yes. But it used to, the timer made the film turn over at preset intervals so that you could run a whole mosaic. If you flew over, let's say, a specified area, you set your camera at, let's say, 1 second or 4 seconds or 10 seconds interval, the film would turn over so that you get an overlapping mosaic of an area where you could then put all the photographs together and gain a whole lot of information on the ground.
Now, what was it, F-24? You said you had to know every screw.
Everything.
What was it like as a camera? I mean, can you describe it? I've no idea what it looks like. I mean, is it a great big thing in the...
It's... the film size, I think, was 5x4, if I remember. Again, it's so long
the
ago.
The plates were...
No, not plates, it's film.
Film.
It's a continuous oral film. I don't know exactly how many shots were on it, but it was quite large because they did a whole run across certain territory. And it has obviously a fairly large lens on it to cover a fair area. It's, as I said, it's...
Was it a good camera?
It was good. For its time, it was overhauled afterwards, but I think it was an F-52, but I'm not sure again, because once I left the photographic course, I was finished with the photography. Now, the other thing which we had